Hello and welcome to another Tech Plus, our very first one for the month of July. And this is where we talk about this week's biggest tech stories. We wrap it up in 60 minutes for you, so you know what's going on. And we also play you some really cool tunes. As always, I'm Jan, and I'm joined by Kane. Kane, hello and welcome back. How was your week?
Thank you for having me back. My week was good. I mean, we're seeing more days with the lights on than the lights off, you know?
Oh, but it's very suspicious.
It is.
Why is it going so well now? Is it Mozambique? Is it because of Mozambique?
We should reconsider how much... I still, to this day, it's funny because since last week, I still don't know if we sold power to them and stopped selling power to them, or if they're selling power to us now.
Yeah,
but exactly. Whatever it is, keep doing it.
Please,
keep the tab open.
It's working, but more and more people going solar, hey? So maybe that's also kind of, alleviating the grid pressure.
Well, that's the other thing about, like, I always thought to myself, you know, we're getting to a point now, just weird, load shedding reduced the load on the grid. But the introduction of inverters and batteries applied that load back onto the grid the minute it came back.
Exactly. Oh, that's true.
So how long would load shedding have remained effective? Because we don't try reduce the average draw. We try reduce the peak, right? When we estimate that it's going to peak and a lot more power than is available is going to be needed, that's our fear, you know. And unfortunately, it's a catch-22. The more people with inverters, the more people with battery systems that aren't facilitated by solar, the greater. It's like using all your 2 hours or 4 hours worth of power over an hour to recharge your batteries.
Yeah,
those are lithium batteries. You get some batteries that'll take 6 hours to charge. Those are a bit more peaceful. But at the same time, you could have a lot of batteries. You could be, you know, you could really have a lot of draw as that power comes back on. I don't think it would have sustained 10 years. If every person had an inverter system, I don't think the grid would have survived when it came back on.
Yeah, because that's also quite a load, eh?
No, it is.
When it becomes available, everybody's just plugging in and charging.
Because when your power comes back, most households are going to have geyser turn on.
Mm-hmm.
They might even have a fan that was on or a heater that was on while power was available, and then when power went out, it stayed in the on position.
That's why we trip and trip and trip again when the power comes on. It's called nuisance tripping because of an overload. Usually when they do like the 6 to 8 slot at night, you can be assured that when it comes back on at 8 and the geysers come on, but it's been sorted out as well.
Yeah, you
gotta, it hasn't happened.
Got to whisper it or else you
not
never
yet,
know you might
not
hear
yet.
It.
Yeah, but listen, have you got one of those or maybe a few of those LED lights with a built-in battery that charges while you use it and then when the power goes out, it stays on?
I've got some globes that do that.
Yeah, the globes, yeah.
I've got the globes.
That you put them in your lights all around your house?
Yes.
And how's it working? How long do they last? I believe you need to leave them on for quite long, almost like the entire day, just so they can shine during load shedding.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a mixed bag. I think the biggest problem with those lights for me, and they work, let's be honest, but towards the last hour,
yeah.
If it's a 4 hour load shedding, that last hour is basically off.
Okay, but two hours?
Two hours, you know, the last 30 minutes, it's a light. It's illuminating, it's not doing its best. But I think the hardest part is, you know, it's not normal for people to leave all their lights on during the day.
You know
what I mean? So one of the biggest mistakes that I end up making is my lights are off and then
charge.
I'm like, oh, wait, we have the rechargeable lights.
But it's quite stupid. They should be able to charge during the day even when they're not on, you know, just like they're still connected. So they should charge but without shining.
It would be possible if they gave you like a remote. Like I bought a cool little system the other day, which is like three little lights with double-sided tape and they're AAA battery powered and it comes with a little remote and you just turn them on.
Oh, those are cool.
Yeah, until the battery runs out. Now you gotta put both your hands and your legs against the wall to pull it off the wall.
Oh, no.
I'm joking. Actually, now that I think about it, it's got that twist thing. So while it's on the wall, you twist it and it comes off in place. So that also doesn't really work that well because I accidentally left it on the one night and woke up and it was dead.
I've got something similar, but it's only motion activated. So when you walk past it, then it goes on and it goes off again. So that's how it saves battery. It lasts for about a week. Then you plug it in like a cell phone. It charges with a lithium battery inside. So you don't need to bother with AAA batteries and all that stuff, because that can get quite expensive, I think.
Yeah, no, it definitely
especially
could.
Especially if Kane leaves the light on. Kane, I'm wondering, do we have any news on the Titan this week? Because this has been an interesting week where they pulled out what was left of the wreckage.
Yes.
Did you think there would be that much left of the wreckage?
Well, I know for a fact that there is a lot of information online which suggests what happened moments before disaster.
Mm.
And the crazy thing is, almost every person that I read or that I listen to, the story changes a little bit.
Yeah, and then there's this one story about them never being on it and changing their identities and starting a new life on an island.
Obviously, the conspiracies would come out. And in all fairness, there's enough oddities about this circumstance to be like, that's a little bit, you know, it's a little bit suspicious. But in terms of new information that's come to light, I think they're sticking with the original story. I think the information that's coming to light is actually discerning, because there's a lot of theoretical evidence that they knew the outcome before the announcement of, you know, they're gone. And that was like the fact that they recorded a massive knocking noise. Now, here's the other thing as well. Remember when they're like, yeah, there was lots of knocking noises. But the thing is, under the water, if you can go online and you can find the sound of something imploding under pressure.
I listened to it. Did you hear that clip?
You'll hear a source of the sound, like an origin, one big bang, and then little echoes.
And it carries on for quite long.
For very long.
So do you think that knocking was like some of the remaining echoes?
I think it was definitely the echoes from the initial implosion.
Mm.
And I think based on the sound that one would hear underwater, I mean, we're talking water is a medium for sound that is more efficient than air, which means sound can travel further in water than it can in air. So the sheer clarity that they would have heard that sound, I think, would have been the biggest indicator that something catastrophic has happened, because of the times that it was lining up. And then the other thing is, marine life would have heard that for miles. Can you imagine being a fish in the ocean and you just hear this massive unknown sound? You must think, geez, what is good?
And
what are they up to?
It carries on for like 2-3 days.
Yeah, the echoes. And there's people floating around trying to figure it out. So they started pulling the pieces of the wreckage out the
water. Basically, the top and the bottom that was left, the whole like middle section that was the carbon fiber section that they were concerned about how good it was sealed and stuff. That part just disintegrated with the people, but the top was still fine because it's metal, and the bottom as well.
There were some pieces that came out looking relatively intact, but then again, it's the inside that's pressurized, not the outside.
Yeah.
So I expected to see the majority of the damage somewhere internally versus externally, because everything inside of that submarine would have been under a massive amount of pressure, and apparently some people say it could have reached temperatures of the surface of the sun.
Whoa.
Moments as it happened.
Seriously.
Because the whole thing, and that's another thing that they say, they said
so
that
they cremated, basically.
They have to take months and months and possibly even a year or two to really investigate every piece of material and try identify where did it start with a leak. You know, where did the catastrophic failure come from? Where did the catastrophic failure happen? All those kind of questions. And really, the reality is the entire incident probably happened in about 0.3 of a second.
Without them realizing, because it takes a while for your brain to know what's happening.
But to conduct an investigation on an event that lasted 0.3 of a second.
Yeah, good luck.
To try and pinpoint starting location.
No.
You know, it's not an easy challenge.
No, but, you know, I was also wondering, because now they say there were some human remains also, but they won't go into detail. So I'm wondering what on earth could possibly be left after such a catastrophic implosion.
Well, I don't think, you know, I don't know about the degree of damage to the individuals. I would imagine there's a substantial amount. Look, when someone told me the temperatures reached the surface of the sun inside, I would imagine there's no Remain. So I'm even surprised that there is.
Yeah.
But in the event that there is, maybe something...
Maybe a small piece of bone or something.
Maybe. I think there would... It's very hard to tell. But they've definitely found enough of something to know they've found something. So it can't be too bad. But they will have to identify them and go through that whole process. It's actually pretty tragic, you know.
No, it's hectic.
Because I went onto YouTube and I watched a video from a expert at the Titanic specifically, who went in these kind of expeditions in 2005 and 2010 and 2012. And they actually drop, if you go down and you go look at the Titanic, and you add the opportunity to go in like the Titan submarine, for example, what you'll notice is on the bed of the ocean where the Titanic lays, there's these little memorial plaques. It's like a piece of metal that they've actually put there, which is like, hey, we were here, we were looking at the Titanic wreck. So it's like little breadcrumbs that people put there. And this guy was taking Titan's footage of going from the front of the Titanic all the way to the back of the Titanic, and he was narrating it, and it was very, very informational. And you kind of take a step back for a second and say, yes, they were dumb. Yes, they didn't check everything correctly. But I wouldn't be watching this video of an up close of the Titanic submarine and that thorough amount of research and investigation that would have gone into it, the experts that would have had the opportunity to get a little bit closer to the action, I think is commendable. It's pretty inspirational that they managed to go beyond the norm and use a material which wasn't recommended for the job. And it's not like they failed on the first attempt. A lot of people that have asked me if I've heard about the story seem to be under the impression that it was the first expedition. This thing had been
going
2021, the whole of 2022.
One too many times.
And this was the feather on the camel's back.
Yeah, so maybe like the pressure was already, you know, a little bit wonky with the last one, and then it just gave in now because it weakened. But it's funny that they didn't do maintenance that we know of, you know?
Well, the from research that I've done into the composite material, the actual material and why they feel like that material isn't suited to it is because traditionally when they would use a casting or something of a very pure material, so atomically it's very pure, it's one solid material throughout front to back, there's no foreign materials or chemicals involved in that process, it allows them to with a very good estimate how much pressure that thing can go under and how many cycles that thing can go under that amount of pressure for. And in this scenario, because it is a titanium alloy, stainless steel titanium alloy of some kind, I'm not too sure on the exact composition, but because it's a material which on an atomic level is bonded, they don't know what each cycle's effect is on that bond itself. So they said it's very unlikely that it will have a catastrophic failure on the first expedition.
Mm.
But because of the nature of that material and because of the fact that it is bonded, it creates an unknown variable, which is when it goes under pressure, does it deteriorate how well it can handle that pressure every time it goes under that pressure? And because of that uncalculatable maths, they didn't know when
you
was going to be the D-Day.
You never know.
It could have been any day.
Yeah, it could have been the one before that.
Could have been in 5 years, could have been in 2 years. Apparently, there were some pretty popular celebrities that were even considered to go on there. I think Mr. Beast.
I saw the YouTuber, hey?
He was going to go on that particular venture.
Yeah,
Elon Musk declined as well.
Oh, my goodness.
To go on that venture.
He turned 52 this week.
Really, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Listen,
but you were on YouTube when things were still really good, hey? Like, it was easier to make money. It was easier to get views, hey?
Yeah. So I came in just after it was the easiest, so it was getting, like, middle difficulty.
Okay, but can you remember, like, the time frame? Because was it in the 2010s?
Maybe 2012.
Okay, that was the good time, apparently. Now, you'll probably know a YouTuber called Colleen Ballinger.
Okay.
Who is Miranda Sings. That's her alter ego.
Oh, yeah?
Now, she was also huge on YouTube. Now, she is currently under fire for allegedly grooming minors at her concerts. So they're in the process of cancelling her. You know what happened to Jenna Marbles and Shane Dawson, how they were just cancelled overnight, you know, because they were doing things in the 2010s that they could get away with, you know, blackface, all that stuff. They could get away with it at the time. People have become so sensitive and woke now in 2023 that playing that same content to them right now offends them terribly.
Wow,
so there goes, I don't know if she's cancelled, you know, the cancel culture, but it looks like they're busy cancelling her. She replied with a video of 10 minutes where she doesn't talk because her team said to her, you're not allowed to respond. So she actually sang for 10 minutes with a ukulele. And she was just singing with that thing and like singing what happened and explaining. But some say a really bad apology, the worst apology ever in YouTube history.
Yeah, I was about to say it's not very genuine.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. It's like bitty ways to see it, but
it's like on brand.
Yeah.
It's like good for the brand. I feel like it's on brand, but at the same time, people are just sensitive. You know, if you've offended someone, if I offend you and you're like, okay, you know what I'm going to do for an apology? I'm going to sing I'm sorry to you on a ukulele. Unless I'm your best friend, you're not going to be very impressed with me.
Yeah, I don't know.
Imagine you go to the shop and you try and buy something, they sell you the wrong thing, you come back and they start singing I'm sorry with a ukulele, you know?
I would probably laugh, to be honest.
It'll lighten the mood. But maybe not if you like, you know, he's just stolen your car, you know, he's singing I'm sorry on his ukulele from behind the bars, you know. It's not gonna resonate well with me.
Oh my word, that's funny. Oh my gosh. Okay.
On that note, it's a time for a music break.
It sure is, and then we'll be back with more Tech Plus. Down.
drown. If this world opens to surface, I'll keep them down. This is the first time I know I don't want to cry.
Welcome back to Tech Plus. If you just joined us, it's Jan and Kane with you discussing this week's biggest tech stories, wrapping it up in 60 minutes. Kane, what have you got for us?
So, talking about TikTok, what would you say is the most popular social media platform in South Africa right now?
It'd probably be TikTok.
Yeah, Do you think it was Twitter. TikTok a year ago?
No.
What do you think it was a year ago?
Instagram.
Think so.
Am I right?
Second to Instagram, what did you say? Facebook?
Yeah, it can't be Twitter. I don't think Twitter's so big in our country.
No, definitely not. It's definitely bigger now.
Yeah.
Also because it's like the only line of communication between South Africans and Eskom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's quite entertaining to watch, but I don't really like Twitter. And now with Elon's upgrades and downgrades...
depends where you're sitting.
Yeah, and I mean, they also cancelled my account and stuff for... suspicious behavior or something, robot behavior, I don't know.
I'd say a year ago it was definitely between Facebook and Instagram. I would even go say like Facebook was dying a little bit, Instagram was kind of picking up the slack. But today, as it stands, TikTok is commanding a 56.7% penetration of South Africa. They've just taken over Instagram.
I'm not surprised.
So here in South Africa, TikTok is basically dethroned Facebook.
Yeah.
And ultimately Instagram.
And I think it's also because you're getting paid for content and stuff. And you're getting gifts and all that kind of stuff. It's a nice incentive for people and to encourage them to make more content.
I know, and I think content creators are really the recipes for success for your businesses. Not just the big guys that make the good content that everybody watches, but getting new guys who have good content to come to the surface and compete with the bigger guys. That's a social media algorithm that's going to work. And I think beyond, you know, TikTok having, you know, this and that that Facebook doesn't, I think beyond anything, from a creator point of view, you get more engagement, you get more views.
It's much easier.
More dopamine hits on TikTok. On YouTube you can upload a video and get one view over a year, you know.
And Facebook is even worse right now. I don't know when last you were on Facebook or the back end of Facebook on the pages side, but it's becoming increasingly difficult to have an organic reach. I read somewhere, I think now in 2023 you're reaching about 6% of your audience organically. In other words, these people liked your page, they're following your page, they're actually interested in your product or service or whatever, but they won't really see your posts, unfortunately, unless they go and favorite you or whatever.
Yeah.
Or go and check every day. 6% of your audience. Now, that's just terrible. And you see that in the engagement also on posts. Just a few posts. You will see radio stations with 200,000 followers and they have like 2 likes on some of their posts. And then I don't feel as bad, you know, because for me as a content creator as well and a social media manager, I feel really offended and just discouraged when I post content that I believe is really good and the timing and everything is good, but I'm not getting engagement. Now I see Facebook's doing this new thing. When you're posting pictures or anything, they kind of encouraging you. They say, hey, why not try that in a reel?
Okay.
So it looks like Facebook is encouraging reels now. Instead of uploading 5 photos like I did this week, they said, no, put it in a reel. So it's like, okay, add some music, and then it actually performs well. So they don't want you to post just 5 photos with a caption. They want you to put it in a reel, bit of music, and it actually performs well. So I don't know what this game is now. I'll play it with them because I don't have a choice. But I really feel that Facebook has some kind of identity crisis right now.
Well, when someone tells you that the format that works best in Facebook is the format of TikTok, that tells
video.
You something.
Yeah, video.
Because Facebook Reels was Facebook's answer to TikTok. It was like, oh, you have video
That's
content
right.
that I can swipe up and down on? We have Reels.
Yeah.
So if TikTok content is working better on Facebook than your traditional Facebook content, it starts telling you that it's not just a social media app thing. It's also a media format preference of consumption thing. Who wants to see 20 videos anymore when you can have 20 highly informationally packed, algorithm tailored media right in your eyeballs,
yeah,
ready
and
for
just
consumption
quick and short and sweet.
Yeah, and it's not, you don't go up a video and you see your best friend who's at some villa having a good time. You see internationally responded to well accepted content,
and it's
where people want, like, you don't turn on Netflix so you can watch your 2010 family reunion video.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
TikTok's serving a different kind of entertainment. It's not entertainment based on my associates. It's entertainment based on what is the most entertaining content. It's
and somehow it knows what you want to see.
And TikTok's not stopping there. I mean, TikTok is probably one of the most influential in terms of how much money they can make a creator. Because Instagram, you can't make money unless you have a business and you're running it inside of Instagram. Facebook, you can't make money. Twitter, you can't make money. Snapchat, you can't make money unless you're running third-party business models on top of you just owning a social account. Whereas TikTok, you make money.
And OnlyFans.
And yeah, exactly. But that's also very, very popular.
Yeah.
So for something like TikTok, they revolutionized the way a content creator can receive money, and they revolutionized the way that users feel when giving money. The most notable thing about TikTok is you never feel like you're gifting currency. You're sending an emoji or a GIF or a filter, and they all cost different prices, and I can choose 500,000 different options. How many ways can you give me 1 rand?
Yeah.
Like, you can give, like, in real life, you can give me 1 rand. But on TikTok, you can give me 10 little emojis that are worth a rand. Or
I'll give you a little bird. That bird cost 1 rand. And then you'll say, thanks, Jan, for the bird. And that means I gave you 1 rand, but it's disguised as a bird.
Yeah, that's how the emoji system works. But
now, I was clever.
Now, TikTok could be launching an online store next month. Unfortunately, it won't be available in South Africa. It's part of their US penetration campaign. But that's something that you can see in South Africa, and you can expect to see like an e-commerce tab inside of your TikTok that'll have an array of curated items as well as products listed for sale through the TikTok shop. And it's going to be like an in-app shopping feature, and it could be launching as soon as next week. So TikTok's not just stopping at media consumption. They're now integrating an e-commerce-like environment, something that could be akin to like your Instagram retailers, you know, those thrift stores and things like secondhand merchants on Insta. But at the same time, now it's built in. It's built in natively to the app. It's part of the shopping experience. Maybe as a creator, you can do a live stream of you tie-dyeing a shirt and then upload it to the e-commerce tab, and then now you can do that. Or maybe it'll only be TikTok merchandise. Maybe you'll be able to buy TikTok shirts and TikTok hats and TikTok shoes, and maybe the only place you'll be able to buy this branded merch and cool tick is going to be through the e-commerce tab on your TikTok app. So they're not slowing down, they're not stopping, and they're not limiting themselves to one identity. They're not a social media platform. They're also a live streaming platform. They're also a live streaming shopping experience. They're also a shopping experience in totality. You know,
they're everything.
They're a messaging app, and it's very difficult as a comp. That's why you see USA trying to ban them. That's why you see all the companies scrambling a bit, because They're really good at what they do.
TikTok is number one at the moment, eh? All over the world.
They didn't get to number one because they're the second best. Yeah. You know what I mean?
But just the whole feel of the app. I mean, it's almost hard to stay off it. When you log on and you open it on your phone, you can see it's kind of a heavy app as well, the way it loads. I suppose it also depends on your phone and the internet connection. But TikTok is just the way it's designed, the way you just all you need to do is swipe up for the next one, and the way the algorithm knows what you want to see. I think that's just brilliant, because I always, when you open it, almost immediately there's a video that you actually have interest in.
Yeah, and it's really, really good. Now, TikTok's not the only one making changes and progressing. WhatsApp has actually come into the spotlight this week, and it says it's now got over 200 million monthly active users on their WhatsApp business app. And the WhatsApp business app lets small businesses market themselves and interact with customers. And it's quadrupled its number of users since 2020. And that's true. I mean, I must say, I've seen a few businesses in South Africa running with WhatsApp business. I've seen some businesses actually serving customers through customer support through WhatsApp.
Nice.
It's really, really good. You know, the WhatsApp business really, really works well as a customer support line.
Much more accessible, and it beats hanging on the line for 2 hours listening to panpipe music.
Yeah, and then I must, and what's the alternative to sending a WhatsApp? I must go to your website, I must find the contact us page, I must fill out a form,
or
I must try to find your number, I must try to call you, or I just go on my WhatsApp and I send you a message and I carry on with my day.
Easier.
I don't have to make sure I keep this tab open, or I check my emails every day. It's just a WhatsApp chat. It's in and amongst your life, you know. It's like five friends and then the business chat you were trying to sort out. That's really cool.
And you can send photos and stuff. I mean, like, remember in the old days when we phoned customer service? Now you're hanging on the line, they pay, usually playing ridiculously terrible music.
Like Telkom.
Remember those, like, flutes and stuff. I mean, later on you'd, like, kind of still hear that music lingering in your head when you go to sleep. You're still hearing those songs, and then your call is important to us, please wait, all that stuff. I mean, that's the old-fashioned way. The new way is just much better.
Just start a chat, a WhatsApp chat with your business.
And you can send a photo or screenshot and actually show them what your problem is. You can't do that on the phone.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can do a lot. So that's really, really good. And it's not the only really, really good thing. Virgin Galactic has revealed its first company's crew members for their first ever commercial space flights. This is a pretty big one. So, a series of experiments will be performed by three Italian crew members aboard the 90-minute mission on June 29th.
This is
past already now.
Oh my gosh. Okay, no breaking news yet.
No breaking news yet, but it's still a monumental achievement.
Yeah.
Because what they did was, it's the first ever commercial space flight. So, they go into space, they go suborbital, and they come back.
Hopefully.
Well, they did, luckily.
But I mean, we can't have a submarine thing again, but this time it happened in space.
Lose someone in space and in water. We're in deep trouble.
And then whatever's left would just fall somewhere randomly in Joburg.
No, people are going to start getting worried. People are going missing in their living room now, you know. No place is safe. But no, it's their first ever crewed space flight. And what they're going to be doing, which I think is really cool, is when they're in that low suborbital orbit for 90 minutes, they've rigged up a science lab essentially inside of the spaceship, and they're going to be conducting experiments. They're going to be testing low gravity. They're going to be testing materials at low gravity and what happens to them. And I just wish I could be on there and just check it out. You know how cool those experiments must be.
So you're more keen to do that, to go up than go down?
I'm keen to go up, go down, go left, go right, wherever you want, as long as I can do cool stuff like experiments. I don't want to sit there like I'm on an airplane looking out the window like, oh, Earth looks nice from up here. I want to do experiments. I want to see what happens when you turn a glass of water upside down while you're at low Earth orbit. Does everyone drown?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
But just don't open the door, right?
don't try and get some fresh air.
Yeah, geez.
No, you get sucked up. But that's very, very cool. So, and I like it because, I mean, Virgin Galactic reminds me a little bit of the Titan sub. It's like this, it's a separate business. They're trying their own technologies. They're trying to make their own way around it. And they're going to be competing with SpaceX, and they're going to be competing with Blue Origin, which is Amazon's or Jeff Bezos' space flight company. And they're going to be competing, and I love competition. You know, you can't let monopolies form.
Yeah.
If you're the only person that offers space flights, you can make whatever price you want. But if you're the most expensive person that offers space flights, there's going to be other people that are cheaper.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, no one can afford like 5 million rand to go on a 30-minute space flight. I mean, that's not commercial. They call it commercial space flight. Like, commercial to who? The elites. Because ain't nobody got money for a 90-minute joyride in space. That's 5 million rand or 10, 20 million rand. Holy moly. I mean, how much was the Titan submersible trip?
$250,000.
So about 5 million rand. Sure. Just a cash 5 million rand to go down under the ocean for 5 hours and look at the Titanic through a TV. You know,
I can't get over that TV thing, eh? That just, I feel extra sorry for them after you told me about that TV thing, because they could have stayed at home.
Exactly.
Just switch on the Titanic movie. You know what I'm saying?
Pay James Cameron a visit.
Yeah, I mean, Titanic, this whole Titanic story has been so big now that people are looking at the movie Titanic with new eyes. In fact, it's so popular right now that Netflix actually added it back on. Because at one stage the license expired and it was removed from Netflix. Now it's back on, I believe.
Oh,
just so people can watch it. And apparently there's a clip in the movie at the end, you know, when the old lady's telling the story and, you know, where they kind of... Then they actually go down to the wreck. Remember in the movie, way at the end, they actually go down. And then the one guy on the ship, on the sub, actually says what would happen if the window or whatever failed or opened or something about the pressure. He said something like that. Isn't it funny?
That's crazy.
It's a bit scary.
Scary.
After all those years, how it's kind of like a premonition, you know?
That is crazy. Like,
how did they know this would happen?
That is eerie. On that note, is it time for music break?
It sure is. Let's go.
What's your name? Nice to meet you. Por favor, señorita. You're the rare, creature, like the rain in the beach. What's your name? Nice to meet you. Por favor, señorita. You're the rare, creature, like the rain in the beach. In the beach.
Welcome back to Tech Plus. We are now in the final stretch of this week's biggest tech stories. It's Ian with you as well as Kane. Kane, what have we got next?
So you mentioned it earlier, you know, you don't really know what's the state of Twitter. You know, is it upgrades or downgrades? What's going on? Well, one of the things that they did which made businesses very angry is the Twitter API. So a lot of businesses connect with Twitter's API to automatically send posts. And it used to be for free.
Mm.
And many people used to use it, and they used to build all kinds of cool automation software, like AccuWeather used to post tweets about weather changes, and
that's right,
and all that used to be automated. Well, Twitter introduced that if you are going to use the API, based on how much you use the API is how much you're going to pay, and that price tag can go as much as $42,000 a month, so just short of a million rand a month, basically. And they've now been receiving Mashable specifically, which is a publisher, has been receiving many reports from developers. They are saying they're struggling with poor customer support and features being abruptly discontinued or changed, seemingly without warning. You're asking a lot from people to pay $43,000 a month to use your software. You're just changing things willy-nilly on the fly.
Yeah, but listen, it's not looking, just from the outside, it's not looking good. Whatever Elon's doing, it's not working. I mean, why would you lose something like 50% of your advertising revenue?
No, it's mad.
Making changes. I mean, there will always be resistance when you make changes. I mean, that's normal. It's part of humans. We don't all appreciate change. But why would you lose 50% of your advertising revenue and thousands of staff members? You know, is this really a good idea?
Not good,
bro. Maybe, what if he bought it and now he's like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do with it. And now it's like trying a few things. Maybe this is all just one big experiment to him.
It probably is.
Because he can afford to experiment with it. He's playing with people's lives, but it's an experiment.
Well, it's his little, it's not like he can afford it. It's like he's paid for it. It's already paid for. He can do what he wants.
Exactly.
Everyone can run away and all he does is lose a lot of money. Now,
run it into the ground.
He paid a lot of money for that. That's the only thing.
It's just unreal, man.
An unbelievable amount of money. I mean, we spoke about it last week. USA gives the biggest loan in history since the recession to an automotive company to the value of $10 billion to start manufacturing lithium batteries nationally. And that's like that's $10 billion. And Twitter was like $50 billion. You know, $50 billion is a lot of money. That's like 5 lithium-ion battery manufacturing plants that could put enough electric cars on the road to make a big difference.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of money. But speaking of a lot of money, Apple. We all know Apple's worth a lot of money. But did you know how much money Apple's worth? In 2022, they broke a threshold and then they returned back to normal. What happened was in 2022, on January 3rd, they crossed the $3 trillion evaluation mark.
Yo.
And they dip back down. And now, a few years later, or 1 year later, sorry, they're back at it. They've just passed the $3 trillion mark and could hit a $4 trillion cap by 2025, experts have estimated, which is absolutely insane. They've also gone on to say that 25% of the user base that has iOS installed hasn't upgraded phones in more than 4 years. So what could essentially happen now with the introduction of the iPhone 15 is we could see a mini super cycle iPhone 15 where for some reason a whole bunch of people go to the latest iPhone 15 model, which kind of makes sense. You know, if you have a phone that hasn't been upgraded in 4 years, in more than 4 years, you're likely to probably get the next one. So that's something that Apple's expecting, you know, this year, which could see some good impact for them price wise and then at the same time, we've also got the Apple Vision Pro VR headset that just came out, which a lot of people who are stock traders and investors in the company are like, you've essentially positioned yourself as someone leading the way with high computational VR headset equipment. That's driving some of that price as well. People are really like, if there's any headset that can really make an all-in-one ecosystem for VR where you can seamlessly go from messaging app to Safari to WhatsApp to your game to business meeting to Zoom and then to your iMac, right? And then to your iPad and all of that integrated and connectable with your VR headset without touching any one of the devices, it's Apple.
It's no wonder they made so much money.
Yeah, they got
LSD. The charging people were... It's expensive. I mean, not every second guy owns a Mac, you know?
No.
And or an iPhone, you know?
I mean, the VR, the Apple VR Vision Pro is a 70,000 rand piece of equipment.
Yeah.
70,000 rand.
Would you buy it?
A pair of glasses. Would I buy it? Yeah. Yeah, with a plane ticket and I'll jump out of it because that is far too expensive.
Yeah, see, not even Kane wants to buy it. It's too expensive.
Give it to me for free. Different story, you know. Best of friends, but yeah. I'm not. I just don't. I would love to be part of it, but also there's a reality that's like, you really have to have quite a lot more than 70,000 rand, because you're not gonna get critical proficiency tools that are gonna make you work even 10% faster than someone else. In fact, it's gonna be clunky, it's gonna be bulky, it's not gonna be refined, you're gonna have very little apps to work with. Why? Because you're part of a Gen 1 product. You're not buying the thing that's usable. When we buy the Apple VR Vision Pro headset in 5-10 years from now, and it's part of our daily driver, that was built on the Gen 1 adopters. And no one who isn't wealthy should think themselves, you know, financially feasible enough to be an adopter of a Gen 1 headset. If you're doing it for any other reason other than just entertainment, let me get my hands on some powerful technology. And hopefully in 6 months to a year, when all the developers are building on it, I'll start using it more and more and I'll see the value come back to me. So realistically, you know, Apple VR headsets, high-end headsets like that, like high-end headsets are going to be very popular in 5 years, but you definitely don't need to buy them now because you won't see a productivity bump. You're going to be nauseous a lot.
Yeah.
Right?
You have to adjust to it.
A friend of mine has a VR headset and he says, you know, it's fun, but sometimes you just don't feel like going to a VR headset and feeling sick.
Yeah, because it messes with the brain.
You have to get through the adoption phase. Yeah. So you have to play a month or two to really feel good about, you know, getting in a VR headset.
Ugh.
So it's work required. And 70,000 rand for that much work required, for me, I'd rather pay 12,000 rand, get a Facebook Oculus Quest and go through all the teething problems and developer problems. And then when it breaks, I can buy 5 or 6 more of them before I've even spent the same as an Apple Vision Pro.
Does the Vision Pro come with a bucket for the nausea?
A bucket for the nausea.
Imagine they sell this bucket. It's like this silver fancy apple bucket in the shape of an apple.
And as the closing story for today, the last one, the one we'll end it on, Google is in hot water over their video ad system at the moment. So everybody's heard of YouTube ad blocker.
Yes. Right?
And it really works against YouTube's financial model for how they stay afloat if you implement ad blockers.
Mm-hmm.
You quite literally stop them from making any profit from you as an individual.
They must really hate those people.
They must hate ad blockers, eh? And they've been pretty verbal about it in the past. They used to have prompts that are like, you're using an ad blocker, please don't. They have the YouTube Red subscription, which is a $3 subscription and you don't have any ads.
Aren't you taking money away from the creators?
Well, the creators aren't going to earn money because no ad was served.
Yeah.
So that's not going to work.
So that's not nice.
So what YouTube has gone and said now is, or Google, because Google owns YouTube, what they've said is, we will warn you 3 times to turn off your ad blocker.
And then?
And then we'll block your videos.
Oh.
So if you're using an ad blocker and you warned 3 times, you can't access YouTube.
Or what? Or what?
Good question. Like VPN, go to a different browser, done. Very difficult to implement. Moderate that is very difficult.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you go onto YouTube with your ad blocker and you get blocked, you go open up a different web browser on a VPN and you're not blocked anymore. And then you get blocked again and you just change your VPN location. You can go again. And it's not very regulate. You can't regulate it very well. It's kind of like the Netflix password sharing thing.
Yeah, I was thinking of it. They're threatening, but will they actually do it, you know?
Yeah.
Mm.
So it's a bit of a problem for them, but that's crazy that people, you know, you build a company, it makes money off ads, and other people build software to stop your ads from running because people just don't like ads. They don't care about your company.
Exactly, you know? And YouTube's really been pumping those ads, eh?
It's 5, 6 in 1.
I swear they added even more ads after I cancelled my YouTube subscription because I had it for a month or two just to see what it was like without the ads, and it was nice, but it just didn't feel that it justified the money that I paid for it. And then just after I cancelled it, now every now and then when I open it, it there's this, like, you almost click on it accidentally. They do it by on purpose, so it says restart membership, but it's like in the middle of the screen where you almost click on it. That's clever. And then you know, they really pump the ads. It's almost like they're really trying to drive you back into subscribing again. I think they increase the frequency of the ads they once do. You cancel, just to get you back again or something.
I definitely think they engineer double, triple, quadruple back-to-back
they don't
ads.
Add, and there's no skip button or anything. You got to wait.
Because getting an ad every video isn't so bad because you get used to skipping one ad.
Yeah, no,
but
that's
fine. You have
fine.
To skip three and you lose your mind.
Two, I can also do two. Two really short 15-second ones. But three? No, come on, man. I'm not watching TV.
Yeah.
It's like traditional TV.
And you can set up ad campaigns that the only time you pay for the ad is when the user watches a full 30 seconds.
Yeah. And then sometimes at this terrible, terrible time in videos, it just cuts to an ad. I don't know if that's YouTube or the creator putting it.
Creator
like
can choose where to put
it. Because that's very stupid, because it's in the middle of a sentence.
Yeah, sometimes they'll try and like lock it behind some sort of reveal, or today we're testing the results of this.
No, that's clever. That's clever, but not in the middle of a random sentence.
No.
That must be a mistake, surely.
But you know what? The most frustrating thing for me about YouTube ads by far is the fact that you know, we come from 5 years ago, 10 years ago in Nisner or in you know, South Africa, we didn't have fast internet.
Mm.
So now you want to watch a little YouTube video at high quality.
Oh, I know what you're
okay,
gonna say.
And you've let it buffer and it's got a nice gap in there and you're feeling good because you know there's no way that you're going to experience buffering. Ad plays and then it starts buffering from scratch
you lose
again.
That whole underrun disappears and starts again.
Listen,
that was a big issue in, when was it? Also in the 2010s?
Yeah.
With ADSL?
No, even now, like a year ago, I mean, you're on mobile data and you're finally watching this video that's been buffering, and there you get an ad and now you've got to start the whole buffering from the beginning.
Yeah, it's not supposed to reset that thing.
It shouldn't, but it does.
It's supposed to keep running.
And I've had experiences where I'm like, a while ago, I was trying to watch like a 20-minute video and it preloaded the whole video. I was like, fantastic.
Yeah.
And then one ad at the 2-minute mark. And the whole 20-minute video starts from
buffering
scratch.
Buffering again. Oh, my word. Yeah, you see, that's the kind of stuff you wonder about at 2 a.m. Why is it like that? And nobody's got the answer. You just got to live life with it.
No, you do. And on that note, we're done.
On that note, we're done for our first show for July. Yes, Kane, thank you so much as always. And I hope you're going to enjoy what's left of the weekend.
Absolutely. And same to you. And thank you to all of our listeners.
As always, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. See you next week.
Bye-bye. Absolutely. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
It's been a couple months. That's just about enough time for me to stop crying when I look at all the pictures. Now I kinda smile, I haven't felt that in a while. It's late, I hear the door bell ringing and it's boring. I open up that door, see your brown eyes at the entrance. You just wanna talk and I can't turn away, oh my dog. But please don't ruin this for me. Please don't make it harder than it already is. I'm trying to get over this. Today just
Now I can't say goodbye. If you stay here the whole night, you see it's hard to find an end to something that you keep beginning over and over again. I promise that the ending always stays the same, so there's no good reason in make believing that we could ever exist again. I can't be your friend, can't be your lover, can't be the reason we hold back each other from falling in love with somebody other than me. I guess I'll let you stay for as long as it takes to grab your books and your coat and that one big cologne.